You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
The knee on the neck of justice for black Americans. Profound fear and trauma. The pain, the exhaustion that black and brown Americans experience every single day. The murder of George Floyd launched a summer of protest we hadn't seen since the civil rights era in the 60s. Protests that unified people of every race and generation in peace and with purpose. To say enough, enough, enough of this senseless killings.
Those are the words of President Biden yesterday following the verdict that found Derek Chauvin guilty on all charges. As you know, that happened about 40 minutes, maybe an hour plus after we were off the air yesterday. We knew it was coming. We told you it was coming. And there was President Biden yesterday saying enough that now we have justice. Now, there's a lot of pushback in various areas. We're going to spend a lot of time today going through a lot of this for you. So Biden made those remarks after the verdict, and he's certainly entitled to say whatever he wants, especially after the verdict. But he had made some remarks prior to the verdict, which some took exception with when he began to talk about he was praying for the right verdict, the right verdict. Now, what's a right verdict? Well, for Derek Chauvin, the right verdict was innocent on all charges. The right verdict for those who wanted him prosecuted was guilty on all charges. And in fact, that's what they ended up getting. So what we really wanted was the just verdict. Chauvin would probably say, we did not get it. Others are saying we did, and yet it's not enough, and yet it's not enough. Do you agree with this verdict? Would you agree if it had been totally innocent? Was the verdict, and this is a key point, was the verdict reached on facts? Facts only, nothing else. Of course, we're going to have appeals coming. And we already knew in advance of the verdict being delivered that the remarks by Congressman Waters and even the remarks made by President Biden prior to the verdict coming down might be in play. President Biden's remarks made prior to the verdict less likely, as he talked about. He said, it's a horrible crime, but I'm only saying this after they are now in deliberations. In other words, they can't hear me. Waters' remarks were made Sunday night. The jury was never sequestered. Why? That's a big question. Of course, the other part is, why was it held in the region? Why was it not moved to another area of less sensitivity? That's what normally happens in high-profile crimes. Well, that takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of money all the way around. But I'm sure the prosecutor wanted to make sure it's held right there so he could oversee it. But the appeal's coming. Will the remarks in particular about Waters and saying we're not going to be satisfied with anything but murder verdict and guilty, guilty, guilty on all charges, and we're going to stay in the streets if it doesn't happen, did that influence the jury in any way? Well, we don't know if they had access or not. We're told they don't think so. The judge said, I asked them not to, so he's relying on the juries. To my knowledge yesterday, the defense did not poll them after that verdict to ask, did you see or read anything since you started deliberations or in the last closing days, anything? So we're going to get into that. Jonathan Turley, George Washington University law professor. And then if you did think that the guilty verdict would end protest, the rioting in the streets, no, in Portland last night, arson, attacking police, all in the name of Derek Chauvin, a guilty verdict, and of course on behalf of George Floyd. I'm going to share many of the thoughts representing the black community today from often spokesmen for the black community. And the short-term and long-term effects of the conviction of Derek Chauvin. Sentencing is scheduled in a couple of months, 40 years max, apparently. What happens if Bob doesn't like that sentence? If the verdict is overturned, what happens? And what happens on a daily basis between police officers, regardless of their color, and minority community? Every shooting involves a police officer with a suspect is going to be always questioned. And the facts are more whites have been killed by black police officers than blacks, but that's not in play for many right now. Also, Edie Heipel is going to join us, Center for Renewing America. The government caught buying a human flesh from aborted babies that could have been preemies. And Jonathan Daniel Davidson of The Federalist, are you a rube, ignorant, because you won't get the vaccine? Lock and load, ready on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
And we're down we go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
That is some of the action going on last night following the ruling involving the Derek Chauvin trial. They're hollering out, cops are bastards, over and over again, over and over again. Now, when they do that, of course, they blanketly label every police officer that might be doing the very best job in their community or any community. But they have clearly labeled them at that point as basically with a slur, and deciding that we're still not happy. Then they also were running around shouting, the National Guard are effers. The National Guard, which had been sent in to make sure there's protection and no violence following the verdict coming out of the George Floyd trial, they were there to maintain peace. Where are we now at this point that anything and everything that has to do with law and order has to be considered a slur and a slander, and it's always a racist attack? I mean, seriously. Are there cases where, yes, it should be questioned, it should be investigated? Absolutely. Never going to deny that. But where is it that we're suddenly going to label anyone that has anything to do with any law and order, that they're going to label them as either bastards or call them effers over and over again? Do you think those National Guard troops really want to be there? Well, of course not, because they've been activated and brought in just because of the threat of violence following the verdict. Now, in Minneapolis area, there was no violence last night. But you had BLM in the streets, as you were hearing, in Minneapolis, shouting, all cops are bastards, and then also shouting, F the National Guard, that the governor, Democrat governor, brought in to maintain peace. And in addition to Wisconsin National Guard, the state of Illinois sent almost 150 National Guard. The whole point, of course, was to maintain peace. You don't like the verdict? We got it. If he comes back and you don't like it, we got to be ready for you. And then, of course, in advance of all of that happening in the streets, the congresswoman from California, Democrat Congresswoman Maxine Waters, flying in from California, there to basically vilify police. She's not out in that crowd yelling, as you heard then, but she did not do anything to encourage them that when the verdict comes down, let us try to have peace and order, and let's don't continue to constantly claim every cop is out to kill a black person. You know that's not true. Are there cases where things get out of hand? Yes. And is it often? Often. In a case where the person being stopped is not following a directive from police? You can't deny that. But then does the officer go too far? Or by accident? Or by simple chaos or fog of the event, things get out of control? We had yesterday, I'm not sure I had time to get it on, more stop and think about it. I didn't, and I was going to try to do it today, and again, I don't have time. I'll try to do it today. But former Milwaukee County Sheriff in Wisconsin, David Clark, a black man, says for 30-odd years plus, he'd been on the police ranks in every level. He said, my advice to anyone, regardless of your color, when you're stopped by police and they give you a lawful order, obey it. You don't fight it out in the street because that's when things go wrong, and that's not going to end good. And as he points out, because at that moment, the police officer might be held accountable and overturned or put in jail or anything else, but at that moment, he is the law making a decision. And if the cops had a bad day or basically things got out of hand or she thinks he's under threat and they reacted maybe in a way that they didn't have to, but at that moment in their mind they thought so, he points out that's not going to end well, particularly for you. But let's go back. Now we have the verdict. We had this time yesterday, we're waiting to see the verdict. And what was it going to come down to? My personal thought at that time, he's going to be found guilty on something. I would have thought maybe a lesser charge. I'll have to admit, I was totally surprised, guilty on all three counts. But I don't care at this point, whatever my opinion was or what I believe it shouldn't be, it's moot. Because the jury makes the decision. Pending any appeal, see what happens. And, of course, part of the appeal issue is going to be what Congresswoman Waters was doing Sunday night before the verdict was issued, but also before the jury was given their full instructions. Again, Congresswoman Waters from Sunday night.
Guilty, guilty, guilty. And if we don't, we cannot go away.
And not just manslaughter, right? I mean...
Oh, no, not manslaughter. No. This is guilty for murder. I don't know whether it's in the first degree, but as far as I'm concerned, it's first degree.
Congresswoman, what happens if we do not get what you just told? What should the people do? What should protesters on the street do?
I didn't hear you.
What happens...
What should protesters do?
Well, we got to stay on the street. And we've got to get more active. We've got to get more confrontational. We've got to make sure that they know that we mean business.
Well, those words, of course, are the very things that we're talking about. Could have obviously been opening up an opportunity for more violence on the streets and are an option for a dismissal. An overturn of the rule of the verdict being overturned, even if it comes down guilty. What are the odds now, based on that, with the decision issued by the jury yesterday, what are the odds that this could be overturned because of remarks and so forth made by Waters and even President Biden while he was saying, I'm making my remarks only after the jury is moving into deliberations? But during the campaign, he had already made it clear in his mind George Floyd was guilty. He had said that in the campaign. That cannot be forgotten. It wasn't restated during the course of the trial, but it was already there. Now, this jury, six whites and six mixed race, black, and or a mix of some type, they made the jury decision, as we have our justice system set up, that he's guilty on all three counts. So the question for George Washington law professor Jonathan Turley, are there grounds for overturning this? And Jonathan Turley responding in the sense that, yes, there are some grounds to be considered, but will it actually amount to overturning?
I would be surprised if they could overturn this verdict, but there are really serious questions about the judge refusing to change the venue early on, not sequestering the jury. It's not just Waters' comment. You know, during voir dire, during the selection of the jurors, for some reason, these politicians decided to announce a record settlement with the family. That had an impact. Then there was the rioting. Then there was the Wright shooting. The venue was never changed. The jurors were never sequestered. Those are legitimate issues. The question is whether they can show something concrete and whether they actually question the jurors. Did you see Waters' comments? Did you?
Can they do that?
Were you impacted
by
the media?
They can ask them that?
Well, they can. Usually what you do is you ask the court to poll the jury, to question the jury. I don't know if that was done, but even without that, you can raise these issues of venue. This was a media-saturated area. It was also an area of heavy rioting. I think that the judge made a mistake by not changing venue at the very start of this trial.
And that's a key issue we're talking about a moment ago. Again, that's Jonathan Turley saying that I think the case could have been moved on a change of venue, that it should not have been held where it was. Well, that's hindsight at this point. And again, where it was held, there was constant consternation and protest and remarks that were on. You thought you got a lot of it wherever you live. It was a constant barrage for those living in that area. It was in their face every day in one fashion or the other, either by news reports and or by activists and or by defense. Those who wanted to defend Chauvin or say there's some cause to take in mind. But again, you go back to Congresswoman Waters and her insistence the other day.
We're looking for a guilty verdict. We're looking for a guilty verdict, and we're looking to see if all of the talk that took place and has been taking place after they saw what happened to George Floyd, if nothing does not happen, then we know that we've got to not only stay in the street, but we've got to fight for justice. But I am very hopeful, and I hope that we're going to get a verdict that is a guilty, guilty, guilty.
And again, in her mind, that's the only thing we're going to take is guilty, guilty, guilty. Wish you got that verdict. That's what came back. Again, law professor Turley says, despite those things happening in the street, even though the judge condemned Waters for her remarks and said basically that we should not have members of Congress speaking out and getting involved in this, they should basically, in his opinion, just keep their mouths shut and not be getting involved in this. Turley raised the question a moment ago, as I did as well. What about sequestering the jury? In many cases, you either move a trial from an area where the news coverage has been saturated because you cannot find impartial jurors, or you sequester the jury, you impanel, so they cannot possibly see any print, internet, text message, TV, radio coverage of what is underway. The purpose there is to make sure the jury is untainted, that they're dealing only with the facts. The issue of not sequestering them does have Jonathan Turley, George Washington law professor, a little perplexed.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I thought Cahill did a very good job. I thought he was a good judge. But I think he blew that one. I think that he should have sequestered those jurors at various points. I didn't agree with him when he decided to keep the trial in Minneapolis. I didn't agree with him when he decided not to sequester the jury when that settlement came down. But then when all of this stuff was mounting, he sort of stayed the course and wouldn't sequester them. Right. I have no idea why he did that, but I think that it could have contaminated this jury.
Well, it certainly could have, and that will probably be, it, if not grounds for an appeal and actually overturning, certainly part of the filings coming forward. And then, of course, the whole issue of, is this going to help the nation begin to heal and move forward? That's a much more difficult answer. In part because some are just absolutely convinced cops are always killing black young men. And on the other side, we want to have law and order. I want to share direct remarks from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about her view of where we are now based on yesterday's verdict. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
It's just a shadow, a shred of the fact that millions of people had to march for George Floyd to be treated as equal and human in an unjust system. That's not justice. And so we need policy change. We need systemic change. But this is not resolution. It's just a moment, but this isn't resolution. And this doesn't end until we address the massive systemic institutional racism in the United States that leads and accepts black people, our black brothers and sisters, our brown brothers and sisters, our native brothers and sisters, as less than human.
Those are the words of Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York. I don't condemn everything she said. I don't disagree with everything she said. But there are some points that I think maybe need a little bit more fleshing out of detailing and understanding. It's her opinion that the George Floyd case is just a shred of fact that this is an unjust system, and she said this is not justice still. We still need policy change, systemic change. Systemic change, if it's going to happen, the way they keep describing it, it's going to involve both sides. And I don't mean by demonstrations. I don't mean by giving a blind eye and ignoring when people are in the street beyond their First Amendment rights, causing arson, looting, attacking police and others. Congresswoman Maxine Waters said regarding the guilty verdict to Derek Chauvin, she said, you know, someone said it better than me. I'm not celebrating. I'm relieved. Well, I'm obviously relieved that we did not have a widespread breakout of violence. But do we have to worry about violence simply because somebody does not like the verdict on whoever it is and whatever it is? Senator Ted Cruz said, and this is his remarks, Democrats wanted looting, police cars firebombed, and violence because he argued, quote, serves their political end. He said the dirty little secret is as bad as Maxine Waters' comments were. They're not an outlier in the Democrat Party. You had Democrats encouraging this violence. So at that point, let's see if we can bring these opposing sides together and say, do you agree no violence in the street exceeding your First Amendment protest rights? If we get Democrats to agree with that and begin to call out and call for a cessation when things get out of hand like this, then we're making some progress. But if we're going to continue to not even bother condemning them and calling them out, that's not going to help because the other side's going to get more entrenched. The Derek Chauvin case is over, but there'll be more cases to come. There are more cases in the pipeline now to be decided. And yesterday, a young black woman, teenager, shot by police. She had a knife in her hand. She was attacking other black members in her community when police arrived and they ordered for her to, you know, stop attacking. And then in an instant, a decision was made to open fire. Some are saying, couldn't you use less lethal? Maybe. I don't have all the details. But you can't second guess everything on the street on a constant basis simply because it involves white officers or black suspects. You're not going to make any progress like that. And if the left will not call out when things are wrong, they're not making any progress. Coming up, a very concerning story. Stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure many of you do enjoy entertaining guests. I mean, it's your nature to be hospitable. But we all draw the line at unwelcome guests. You know, those that come in tramping around, oh, they're 6 feet, 8 feet, more. And when that happens, you do not want to delay. Call Rottler Pest Solutions immediately. Now, I started using Rottler more than 30 years ago because I wanted professionals. Rottler knows what is needed and at the same time will make sure that your family and pets are safe. Rottler is still family-owned and operated for 3 generations, protecting homes and businesses. 3 generations. That's impressive. So when you want to safely, expertly get rid of ants, spiders, and other critters, call Rottler Pest Solutions, 877-ROTTLER, or you can check their website, rottler.com, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER, Rottler Pest Solutions, rottler.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Regardless of your view on abortion, I want you to listen closely to this story, even if you are for abortions. You're going to have to explain to me how you could possibly justify what we're about to discuss. There's some recent emails uncovered by Judicial Watch between FDA employees and the California-based Advanced Bioscience Resources proving the agency spent tens of thousands of dollars buying aborted babies for unethical scientific experiments between 2012 and 2018. The Trump administration terminated that contract in 2018, halting it. But apparently there is plenty of evidence in a 600-page report from Judicial Watch. Our government was buying and trafficking fresh aborted baby parts. Body parts purchased by the U.S. FDA to humanize mice and test biological tests in scientific experiments. From babies up to 24 weeks old, just weeks before being born, they could have been born as preemies. Shocking? Yes. And joining us now, Edie Heiple. Edie Heiple did an excellent article on this I want to share with you. It was originally put in a previous article and now also on a Federalist article. Edie is with the Center for Renewing America, worked in the Trump administration and White House Office of Management and Budget. And again, we're talking about the federal government caught buying the flesh of aborted babies that could have survived as preemies. Edie, welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me on, Larry.
So as you begin to get into this, before I even get into more details and so forth, I just like your personal gut reaction as you begin to spend your hours and hours going through these papers and trying to put together this article.
Right. I mean, it was probably one of the darkest things I've ever had to read through. I mean, this report is nearly 600 pages long, full of direct emails, direct quotations, and evidence of what our government has been doing, which is essentially trafficking human body parts, the body parts of unborn babies. You know, I really didn't feel like I had a choice in writing this article. It just simply had to be done. And I can tell you that it was a dark process.
And beyond that, what was the initial reaction from those around you as you began to come out with this story and they saw how detailed this was and how explicit and shameful?
I've been impressed, honestly, by the amount of people who've reached out and looking at the shares of the article alone. I mean, it's gone rather far, and I think it's really put to words what the pro-life movement has been saying for decades, but has been denied by the pro-abortion side, which is simply like, this has not been happening. This is just a conspiracy theory pushed by pro-lifers, but that's not true. These emails and documents prove that this has indeed been going on, and so people are outraged about this, having the explicit information in front of them, seeing just how bad and how dark this was.
You've got a piece in here, and again, I'm reading from your report, and I assume you're referring to some of the direct emails between FDA officials and ABR employees, and again, ABR employees, Advanced Bioscience Resources, where you point out that the conversations as they collaborate to buy and sell aborted fetuses, records indicating ABR was paid $12,000 up front per baby, some survivable out of the womb between gestation age of 16 and 24 weeks. How in the hell does that happen?
There just simply aren't words to describe how this is happening. I mean, in no humane society, I think, could this occur. I mean, again, as you pointed out, 24 weeks gestation, that's well after the point in a woman's pregnancy at which a child can survive outside of the womb and indeed go on to thrive and live a healthy, normal life. I mean, this is just appalling. The facts speak for themselves.
And the point there, I mean, I don't see anything in here where Planned Parenthood itself was directly involved. Flesh that part of the story out for me.
Well, in fact, Planned Parenthood is kind of the top partner, so to speak, with ABR, this tissue procurement firm out in California. If you even do a quick Google map search on the map, you'll see that ABR is located in what is kind of a mecca of Planned Parenthood. There's about, you know, at least half a dozen, if not more, Planned Parenthoods in the area. So certainly, you know, in the research that I uncovered in my piece, I didn't reference specifically just how involved Planned Parenthood is. And really, it would take more research to just know the extent of which they are involved. But well, ABR well, definitely plan.
And we do know from prior actions, Project Veritas and others, you got Planned Parenthood members basically haggling over babies' lungs and livers while having dinner parties as to what it would be worth. And one of them even on tape saying, what do you want for it? So what, I'd like to get a new Ferrari or something of that nature, Maserati. I mean, how callous. And we're talking about babies.
Right. I mean, the casual and callous nature of these discussions, I think, is what is most appalling and what should most shock us to see the culture of death firsthand and how far it's gotten in our society.
And you point out, speaking of callousness, to use that phrase in your article, you write, with the callousness of picking a cut of meat from a butcher shop, an FDA doctor requests tissue samples be procured from a baby boy, as they claim, quote, it is strongly preferred to have a male fetus if possible, but undetermined sex or female is better than no of it tissue. And the response from the ABR employee was also just sickening.
It was. I mean, the discussion they're having is sickening from the little that we know of what abortion procedures look like at this stage in gestation. I mean, from 16 to 24 weeks, the procedure they're using is dismemberment. So you can imagine that the after effects of that, you're not going to know what the sex of a child is, because clinic workers are having to piece together the remains of a child. So again, this discussion speaks for itself.
I'm sorry. I want to take one moment to have you repeat what I just thought I heard you say. If this is already not appalling and shocking enough, you're telling me that they are then taking mangled parts from the abortion and, quote, piecing them together like you're putting together a puzzle?
Essentially, I mean, the problem that you have there is at the end of an abortion procedure, they need to ensure that the entire baby has been removed from the woman. That's a common thing that they have to do to ensure, of course, there's no problem of infection. So really, these clinic workers have to put back together, essentially, the child to make sure that they have everything.
When we're looking up to 24 weeks, babies after 20 weeks gestation normally can survive outside the womb as a preemie. We know that. I mean, they might be less the size of a soda can and about that weight, maybe 8 ounces, not pounds, 8 ounces. And yet, all of this, we've got late-term abortions being pushed by the progressives across the nation, and basically, for whatever reason, up to the moment of birth, if the woman decides, no, I don't want it, maybe I can't have a baby and pay for my cable bill. Now, I know I'd sound callous to many when I say that, but I'm telling you, some of these decisions are made just about that indifferent. Your thought?
Well, you're right. I mean, the lie that the pro-abortion side has pushed for decades as well is simply that late-term abortions don't occur, which, as we know just from this alone, that's just not true. I mean, these children are up to at least 24 weeks. That's what we have on record here, which is a late-term abortion, which is the age at which they can survive outside of the womb. So, again, that lie is just incorrect. This is occurring.
So the government, a court decision in a Judicial Watch lawsuit, did find that the government, and the court itself found that the government bought second trimester livers, thymuses, brains, eyes, lungs for hundreds of dollars apiece from ABR. Those could well have been fully formed babies.
Definitely. I mean, that is what is on record here in some of these pricing charts and some of the receipts. Again, this is all available online. Any person listening to this show right now can go online and find this out for themselves and see the records of this.
And I'm going to give you folks again Edie Heiple's spelling and name as we wrap up. And the article, this particular article I've got from me, was published by The Federalist, which I'm glad they picked up your story as well. But in the midst of all of this, Edie, we're told, believe the science. And here's where I have such a break with these people rushing forward with abortions, especially late-term abortions, to believe the science. If there's a heartbeat inside the womb, the science tells me, much less God, the science tells me that's a viable child.
Exactly. And it's ironic how this news kind of makes the argument for the humanity of the unborn child, because their organs are fully developed enough to be used in humanizing mice and using, scientific research to conduct experiments like this. They need human body parts. This just proves how human unborn children are.
All right, I want to thank you very much for your time and sharing more details of this article with us, ED. I appreciate it. We'll stay in touch on similar articles down the road.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Edie Heiple with the Center for Renewing America. You can go to The Federalist, and her name is Edie, E-D-I-E, Heiple, H-E-I-P-E-L. We will be putting this up as a podcast and also for a YouTube segment as well. Get involved with this story. And, there are women that have maybe a legitimate reason. They made a mistake and they want to have the abortion. If their mother had made that decision, they wouldn't be facing their own decision. Coming up, how the late-night comedians talk about the Derek Chauvin trial yesterday.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
As you certainly know by now, today Derek Chauvin was found guilty of the murder of George Floyd. The courts did their job and justice was served, and while this is a step in the right direction, there's still a lot of work to be done. Too often, justice isn't served, and the need for police reform remains. We all must continue to call out injustice until things change for the better.
Well, those are the remarks of Jimmy Kimmel in advance of his program last night, based on the conviction on all counts of Officer Derek Chauvin in the death of George Floyd. I wanted to share those with you, and I'm going to share some remarks also made in a moment by Stephen Colbert. The late-night talk show hosts, originally, of course, were meant to be entertainers, and that's primarily what they've done. They certainly have become a lot more politically active compared to what we have had in the past, with Johnny Carson or even after him, others that have walked that stage. But the one thing about Johnny Carson, when he did it, he was always jabbing at someone in kind of light fun, not trying to eviscerate them, and also was giving balance. We do know that most of these late-night show hosts, they are in the pocket of the Dems all the way. They are Hollywood elite. They want to stay in there. They want to be that. They want to be brought in and loved and cuddled. And they consider that they have real important value in what they say. And to that extent, they're right, my friend, regardless of what you think of them. When you look at the audiences that follow them and how fast they gyrate to their remarks and maybe echo them. But doesn't mean, and I'm not going to say that they don't have a right to do it. Again, I will never say anything that refutes First Amendment rights. And just because they're a late-night show host or a comedian, they can say what they want. Same thing with Hollywood. But, of course, we all know sometimes just because you have the right to say it, you shouldn't. But I'm not going to condemn the remarks by Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, he's just saying, basically, that he hoped the verdict would bring comfort to the family and all of those who mourned his death. And he also added this. He said, I want to say good luck in prison, Derek. You'll need it. That's right. I hope you're there for a long time. You consider that over the line? Again, I'm just raising the question for you to consider. And then we have the remarks also from the Stephen Colbert program.
It's hard to celebrate because a man is still dead. But there is a sense of relief that at least this one injustice was not compounded with indifference. And it could easily have gone the other way. No matter what you saw on that tape, this nation does not have a great track record on this subject. But at least in this case, this man faces accountability. But justice is a far more difficult goal. America still has a problem of over-policing and systemic racism, but hopefully this is a step toward a future where police being held accountable for their actions isn't headline material, and a hope that accountability today is a deterrent for tomorrow. As Ben Crump, the Floyd family lawyer, reminded us today, justice for Black America is justice for all America.
Now, again, I'm not going to dissect and refute much of his statements because a lot of it rings sound. And justice for any American is a justice for all of them. But the onus right now is to put the phrase and the emphasis on Black Americans being that they were not being treated fairly to that extent. I've been having some problems along this line because, you know, we have many Black Republicans that are conservatives. They know, and they have faced, even Senator Tim Scott has acknowledged, he's been stopped more times than he cares to admit, and he's a member of Congress. And yes, there may be cases where, let me correct that, there are many cases probably where Black citizens, especially younger, are stopped by police on just cause. Not driving while Black, but just cause. If we open up the door, what are we going to see? I would agree we have to stop that. And when you hear Colbert's remarks that hopefully accountability today is a deterrent for tomorrow. I would have to agree with that. And he also added, hopefully all of this is a step towards a future where police being held accountable for their actions isn't headline material. I'm going to agree with that. You shouldn't make headlines just because you did the right job. But the problem we have is that too many times officers are doing the best they can under the circumstances, split-second decisions, and the general public has no idea of what goes on out there. They have not encountered it on a daily basis. Why? For the general public, because the cops stand in the gap for you, and you should be thankful for that. I cited yesterday a 2020 Gallup poll that showed 70-plus percent of black Americans in neighborhoods who had encounters, incidents with police, they want more police in their neighborhoods. We have a segment, a group that want to constantly condemn, and they will not call out when their group, their side, goes overboard with violence against police and our innocents. You want to balance things? Let's look inward to begin with, on both sides.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.